This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Earth Matters, and I'm Lee Chui Lin. Turtles have been travelling the oceans before the dinosaurs, but now they struggle against the threat of a much younger species, people. Fortunately, some of us have dedicated our lives to protecting them. Dr. Chan Ing Hing of the Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia has been saving marine turtles since the 80s, while Marilyn Connell of the Tyro and District Landcare Group in Australia works with a turtle found only in the Mary River. At the third regional conference of the Society for Conservation Biology, recently held in Malacca, Law Yao Hua spoke to these veterans of turtle conservation about their uphill battles and victories.
Why did you choose to work on turtles? Let's hear it first from Dr. Chan.
A lot of people told me, probably the turtles chose you. Because when I first started out doing work, research work, I was more interested in fish. I was lecturing in the fisheries faculty. And while I was in Terengganu, the director of fisheries department in Terengganu approached the university and asked if anyone could help, you know, in turtle work, because the leatherback turtles at that time were already in severe decline. So I took up the challenge.
When you started working with turtles, how was the experience like?
Well, I felt very energized because I realized that they were in severe decline. And yet at that time, there was almost nobody else working on turtles. So I took it up. I went to look at the hatchery and went to assess what the problems were and so on. And then I started reviewing the literature and got deeper and deeper into it. And I just couldn't stop after that. And I gave up on fish.
Well, in 1998, I first learnt that there was such a creature as the Mary River turtle, and that it was endangered and that it only lived in our river, the Mary River, nowhere else in the world, and there was nothing else related to it. And we thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. Like the marine turtles that Dr. Chan talked about, the Mary River turtle was in serious decline. Our Landcare group, who were also quite concerned about the health of the Mary River, we thought, well, maybe we should be looking after this turtle because nobody else is. You know, who else can do it? We live here. We live beside the river.
So what were some of the main threats to the turtle's population?
Yeah, the main threats at the moment are wild animals, pest species like dogs and foxes, lace monitors that like digging up and feasting on turtle eggs, and sometimes the river, our river can rise during the floods by 20 metres, so that inundates a lot of nesting banks. In the old days, it wouldn't matter because there were so many eggs being laid in the good seasons that it could cope with these natural events and natural predation. But now, because the population is so low, each little event has a magnified impact on the species population.
In the 1980s, when I came into the picture, there were still about 500 nestings recorded per year, but compared to the 10,000 recorded in the 1950s, so it was already like a 95% drop. So I look at the hatch rates in the hatchery. I looked at all the records, you know, from previous years and so on. Why is the hatch rate so low? So I started observing the things they were doing and started reading up the literature, and then so I had a theory, because in those days, when they see a turtle lays its eggs, it drops from the cloaca of the mother turtle into the nest cavity which she has constructed, and that nest cavity is upwards of like 60 centimetres to 80 centimetres deep, and the egg drops that distance. It's quite a high drop. So when they replant the eggs in the hatchery, they thought that they could similarly do the same thing. But the thing is, the time between when they collect the eggs and when they replant the eggs in the hatchery, you know, was many hours. During that time, there's a very short interval. Okay, because if you exceed a certain interval of time, embryonic development would have commenced. And if you handle the eggs after embryonic development has commenced, then they are very delicate. They are very fine membranes which attach the embryo to the eggshell. So if that very microscopic membrane gets broken, the embryo dies, you know. So you actually have to relocate the eggs to the hatchery very, very soon, you know, no later than 3 hours after it has been deposited.
Well, for Dr. Chan, you had your own research group in University of Malaysia, Terengganu, so you could do the research. But for the Landcare group, what did you do to get more knowledge about the Mary River turtle?
One of our members came up with this really innovative idea of making chocolate turtles and selling them because, you know, chocolate is so irresistible and people will buy, you know, once they buy one, oh, they have to come back and buy more. We started a campaign of making and selling chocolate turtles and raising money. And then we went to the University of Queensland in Brisbane and said that we had some money available, you know, some few thousand dollars, Australian dollars, and to encourage a student to do some research. So since 2004, we've been supporting PhD candidates because we gave them like $5,000 a year. They were then able to go and get a much bigger grant from the Commonwealth Government. And so they turned our little $5,000 into $60,000, which meant they could get some serious research equipment that we couldn't otherwise access.
Dr. Chan, for you, were you supported financially by the university, or what did you do to get money?
Okay, my initial grant actually came from ESSO, a seed grant of, I think it was like $60,000, and in those days, I could do a lot of work with $60,000. So that seed grant actually helped me, you know, to do the initial conservation work, and it started me off on the pathway to turtles. And then later on, I get a grant from the Ministry of Science and Technology to do radio tracking work. Because from the studies done through the interviews with fishermen, the data showed that there was actually a lot of mortality in fishing nets. So I contacted my friends who had just done radio tracking work in the US, and then they said, "Hey, Chan, we come and help you and come and collaborate with you in this study." They came, and then I got the state government to sponsor part of their trip. Yeah, so... And again, the rest is history now.
Did you have other ways of getting funds?
Now, while I was doing this research on turtles, every morning the egg collectors came and collect eggs. I really felt very anxious. I said, I'm doing all this hi-fi research, but the eggs are being taken away. The turtles are not protected. You know? So I really wanted to do a conservation project in Redang Island, but I knew that it involved a lot of funding. And if you apply to the government for money to do conservation work, they are more interested in biotech and economic returns from, you know, what you could do with your research.
Then, sometime in the 90s, a corporation running a resort on Redang Island accepted Dr. Chan's proposal to kickstart and sponsor a turtle sanctuary in nearby Chaga Hutang Beach. Funds from the corporation helped to buy nest eggs from the locals and to run the sanctuary. Unfortunately, the Asian financial crisis hit in 1998 and the corporation stopped its sponsorship. The turtle sanctuary ran out of funds.
What to do? Necessity is the mother of invention. Start outreach programs, you know, get people to adopt the nest, because we actually have to pay for the nest, and each person would pay for one nest, and it was so popular, people were so engaged in it, and so we got them to adopt turtles, we got them to adopt nests. When the nest emerged, we would send them the data and tell them, okay, in your nest there were so many eggs and you now have your hatchlings swimming in the ocean. And they used to send messages back to me and tell me, wow, Dr. Chan, you make me so happy. I'm the parent of 90 hatchlings swimming in the ocean. Oh my God, I feel so grateful to you. Can you imagine that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was how I was able to continue doing the conservation work.
Marilyn, what about your situation with the Mary River turtles? Do you have volunteer programs too? And did you have to do some adoption program to fund your project?
We would like to do an adoption program, and we have thought about it, and it's a little bit difficult, but I think we can learn a little bit from Dr. Chan, and the Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia will take on a few tricks. Torres Land Care, you know, we are mostly volunteers, but because the Mary River turtle is an endangered turtle, in fact, it's the second most endangered turtle in Australia, there are certain legislative requirements that even volunteers, you know, you're not allowed to interfere with this, you're not allowed to interfere with that. So we have quite a bit of bureaucracy and training that we have to go through before we can actually just engage volunteers protecting nests. However, we do have volunteer program, and they do protect some nests. Last year, I think we protected about 70 nests, all up and on about 12 different nesting beaches along our river.
What are your main concerns then regarding the, you know, the future of the Mary River turtles?
A number of things. Because the turtle only lives in one river system, it's about 300 kilometres long, our river, but it is very small area when you think of the whole of Australia or the whole of the world for one turtle just to live. So if something happens to our river, then all the species could be at threat. And our land care group, most of our members are farmers, and so they're very concerned about the water quality and the health of the Mary River, and we really want the river to keep flowing. So one of our big threats that we feel like is the expansion of coal mines and the increase in population in the southeast corner of Queensland, where urban developments are happening and they just want to build big pipes, pipe the water from the Mary River to these urban developments or the proposed coal mines, you know, taking the water from the river, which means that the towns that live along the river, you know, it threatens their water supply as well as the farmers who need it for irrigation and for their cattle, you know, let alone the turtle. So we see the turtle as a little bit of a symbol and an icon, you know, that we can help save the river. And by helping to save the turtle, we help save the water and the river and the river health for many other creatures that live in the river, as well as the people who need it to drink and the agriculture.
So by saving the Mary River turtle, you are saving the river, you're saving other endangered species, you're saving your community.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. People and animals. Yeah.
How important is it for people outside to actually experience the animals themselves?
It's very important. One of our problems is that the Mary River turtle is extremely shy. It's very difficult to see, which is a problem because we understand that people do need to see the turtle to engage with it and to connect with it. So what we've been really fortunate to have happen just this year is that our local government commissioned a big bronze sculpture, which is about 1.5 metres long and maybe a metre high, of a Mary River turtle, and it's on display beside the main highway, and children can sit on it and pat it and rub it and get their photo taken with it. Every day drive past, oh, there's somebody there looking at it, getting their photo taken. We call him Mr. T, you know, because it's Mary River turtle. So Mr. T is very popular, and so it's become a tourist attraction, and without actually impacting on the wild population. And, you know, long after we're gone, this bronze sculpture is going to survive. So the community will always know that here there's this special turtle that lives in our district. And yeah, because it's on the main highway and we have thousands and thousands of people every day passing, you know, there's this great opportunity to engage with it. So it's a really great success.
Yeah, I think public outreach is really very important. Through the Marine Turtle Work, I developed this volunteer program where members of the public come to the nesting beach and stay there for 1 week to be involved in the hands-on conservation work, you know, of helping to tag turtles, measure turtles, and then taking care of the eggs and so on and so forth. And in the process, they learn, because we give them lectures and all that, so they learn about turtles. It stays with them the whole of their life, you know, because I've got people who have volunteered for me. Years later, you know, they contact me and say, hey, Prof Chan, I went to Pulau Perhentian and I saw this guy selling hatchlings, you know, to tourists. And, you know, it's wrong. It's utterly wrong. And so I was able to, with that information, I was able to contact the fisheries department and so to go and nab those offenders and so on. So they're still coming back to me, these volunteers. Another way in which I'm trying to promote more awareness is through the creation of a turtle alley in Kuala Terengganu in Chinatown. There's a very derelict old alley which needed to be renovated and upgraded. And so we have turtle mosaics along the alley. We have turtle educational things, you know, trivia and so on. So people who walk through the alley, they feel very joyful, you know, because all these colourful turtle mosaics, and they learn something about turtles. So this is another great way, I think, of engaging the public. Mm-hmm.
So before we end our conversation, what advice would you have for those who are debating if they should dedicate their future to conservation work?
Well, I would say go for it. What has happened to me personally through becoming involved with the turtle is that, you know, now I have this amazing network of Malaysian friends and American friends and Brazilian friends and experiences in other countries as well as our own country. And so it's been really fantastic. And the thing with conservation work, sometimes it is discouraging, you know, because things happen that you wish wouldn't happen, or people not caring for where they live. But Really, when you do some positive work, it is so self-rewarding. You don't really earn huge amounts of money, but they have a lot of self-worth and self-value and a lot of personal reward for even just small little achievements. It's very rewarding.
Yeah, likewise, I would encourage parents to encourage their kids if they show an inclination. Not just turtles, but wildlife in general. Wildlife, as you know, all over the world, they are threatened, they are in danger. And conservationists actually are a dying breed. So we need more conservationists. So kids, go for it.
To learn more about the work of Tyro and District Land Care Group with the Mary River Turtle, please visit their website at maryriverturtle.com and their Facebook page, Mary River Turtle Project. The Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia, which Dr. Chan co-founded, will release terrapins into the wild on September 6th. Here's more information from the Society's secretary.
On 6th of September 2014, Turtle Conservation Society will be organising a terrapin release event. We will release more than 200 head-started terrapins into the Kemaman River. And this is how you can support us. We are putting these terrapins up for adoption. And for 30 ringgit each, you will be able to help support turtle conservation in Malaysia. And we would like to invite you to our terrapin release event. For more information about the release, please visit our website at www.turtleconservationsociety.org.my.
That was Law Yao Hua speaking to Marilyn Connell of the Tyro and District Land Care Group in Queensland, Australia, and Dr. Chan Ing Hing of Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia. You have been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.